Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This is where I answer questions that have been submitted through the week. Sometimes I get them through Instagram or Facebook or fax or just other ways. Just so you'll know, I don't check those very often. So if you – I'll eventually find them usually. But if you do want to ask a question during the week, go to Whitewater Guidebook, and there's a – in the navigation, you'll see how to submit a question. And we have a big show this week, so I'm going to just jump right into it. One thing of note is if you have questions beyond these, just throw them in the comments and we'll get to them. The comments are what make this fun for me. This is just an easy way for me to answer questions that I get so that other people can hear the answers, but also other people can help answer them because I don't know a lot of stuff. So there's things I don't have answers to. Audience out there, please help in the comments. So with that, let's get started. The first one is Dave Frames. First off, love the show. Thanks a lot. You know what? The last couple of weeks, I finished the show feeling like, that wasn't very good, or I rambled too much, or I didn't explain myself well. So I feel somewhat insecure about how I do. So it's nice to hear. Thank you. That's really helps me feel better about what I think is sometimes a bad job. I'm trying to do better, though, everyone, just so you know. I'm working on getting better. I've watched every video you've posted. Wow. I'm sorry you had to do that. Thank you for putting so much time. Yeah, you're welcome. Anyway, you mentioned this on one of your more recent videos. People who attend your classes or want to go day boating where they have a multi-day style frame that requires a cooler, dry box, etc., adding a lot of unnecessary weight to the boat. Yeah, I mean, we see this in our classes. People want to show up even for a private class. You know, they have a raft and then they have, you know, so many things to move. And if you have to launch a boat at a boat ramp and lower it off of a trailer, it's not that bad. But it turns out there's a lot of places to go boating that are really cool that don't – they have to lower it down a cliff or carry it 100 feet. And if we have to do that for 8 boats, it just adds up. Or if you just want to go by yourself, having a big – cool, you know, having to have to sit on a box and having to have a cooler and all this extra stuff just to go boating for a day or two or just for instruction is – a lot. And I think that the core, like a lot of people just multi-day boat. They buy their raft, they buy their frame with all the accoutrements, and they only go boating when they get a permit or do something multi-day. That's not my way of thinking. I'm primarily a day boater who goes multi-day when I get the chance. Like, I feel like day boating is where we practice, we gain our skills, we get better, It's also just fun just to go boating for the day. And so I'm surprised people don't have these day frames. Like, I would think you would get a day frame first and then move into your big, complicated multi-day frame, because the day frame allows you to go run the Clackamas for the day, go run the South Fork of the American for the day, go do the Ocoee, and then maybe something harder. The multi-day frame is so that you can have all kinds of fancy things at your side. You can do a multi-day trip with a day frame. You don't need to have these fancy food boxes and fancy coolers and all these things, double rail frames and ammo cans tied on them for your stuff. You can just keep food simple, bring a couple dry bags full of stuff, tie it in and go do trips. You don't have to have all of that stuff, but people do and they like having it, but it's a problem for day frames. Okay, so can you show or talk about good day frames you'd run on a Raptor Cat? I personally have a mini max with a multi-day style frame and would love to get your take on what I should consider when looking to get a good day frame so I can leave the X. Yeah. Okay, cool. This is super easy. I can answer this. I got to open up. The OG version of this. I mean, the OG is a slant board frame. Let me see if I can find a photo of a slant board day. I'm sorry. I'm Googling this right now. Let me switch videos here so you all can see what I'm doing here. Share screen. And I'm sorry, everyone. I didn't get a chance to go through these questions beforehand. Slant board day rafting frame. Here we go. Slant sternrow frame. There's not really. Let me see if I can find a photo of it. Like something. So on the cat level, something like this. This one here. I don't know if you guys are going to see this. But like this is what we used to have. This is a fancy version right here. This looks like it's made by that company in Groveland in California. I forget what they call it. They do some really cool lightweight stuff. You can't really find good slant boards anymore. But back in the day, and I have some. I like them. This is what we had. We just like, and you go to a muffler shop, and they could weld the frame at a muffler. It'd be heavy, but lighter than your massive overnight frames. And you'd put a slant board on it with muffler pipe or whatever you could get and run that. That'd be a good day frame. Nowadays, kind of the thing people are going with is the NRS Longhorn frame. And this is just a simple, straightforward, light. This is just the way to go. And so, oops, every time I use that app, I got to move it over here. This is, sorry, everyone, I'm trying to use the internet right now. I'm trying to cut and paste things. I didn't have this stuff prepped, so I apologize. So the Longhorn frame, what is going on in the rest? Longhorn, there we go. This is a classic. It's so simple. It's just, you know, four bars, some connectors, some more towers, and a seat. You know, $750. I understand that's a lot of money, but this is a light, simple way. You can just throw this frame on your boat and go boating. And they make them in, you can see they make them in five different sizes. My guess is this 48-inch wide one is going to work great for your mini, max, or whatever boat you had. This is the classic. I would, if I was to get one, though, I'd go with better mounts, personally. I'm pretty sure the better mount frames are lighter and cheaper and stronger. I'm pretty sure they're all three. The hard part about better mounts is you can't just go to a website and order a frame. You have to make decisions on your own. Because he sells the crossbars and the side rails all separately. You can't just be like, give me a day frame of this size. So you have to, you know, order all these parts, order the, you know, the, I don't know, you have to think about it. And the cool thing is he does have different diameter bars. So, you know, I'm a heavy dude, so I want to, or he has different diameters. You can see he does sizes from 1 inch to 1.5 inch. But if I remember right, he has stronger or lighter. And so some of them, he just, you know, puts more material so they're stronger. Some of them he uses less material so they're lighter or whatever science he does, whatever engineering he does. For me, the bar I sit on, I want the strongest. I'm a heavy dude, right? The other bars I go lightest. And these frames, I mean, I have a bunch of these and I have a bunch of the NRS Longhorns. These ones are remarkably lighter. Like you pick this up and I'm so used to picking the Longhorn. And I go pick this up and it's surprising. And they're not, the Longhorn isn't that heavy. It's just nice how light these are. So I wish though he just had like another thing in his navigation that said day frames. And he had a pre-packaged set. You can see the price. Like right now you have to, okay, I got two crossbars, two of these bars. You don't even know the full price because you keep having to add things on. But it is what it is. So, but if it was me, I'd go with better mounts and take the 5, 10 minutes, 20 minutes to piece all the parts together. From him. But if you want the NRS Longhorn, that's a great option too. So, oh, there's some comments. Can you talk about DIY frames? I'm limited on funds, but would like to upgrade from paddles to oars. DIY frames. I mean, it's a pretty vague topic. You can just go to a welder and say, weld me this, right? You can go to better mounts. I don't know how DIY do you mean? Do you mean like buy the individual parts and put them together? Or do you mean like go buy some wood and screw it together and make a frame out of wood, or go to a welder and have a welder weld something for you? Or if you know how to weld, like it's not that crazy. You need to have to do a DIY frame. If you're not going to just go with better mounts or NRS parts, it's just you go to somebody, you either do it yourself or go to somebody who manufactures and they just make a square and you put stuff on it and it's a frame. I don't know what else to say to that. I've done a few at muffler shops. There's a guy down the street. I just go to him and say, this is exactly the bend I want here. Muffler is really good because it's very bendable and it can have round corners. And it's a little heavy, but I can't imagine it being – I can't imagine going to a welder to have something custom welded being cheaper than this Better Mounts thing. Maybe it is, And if you can weld, I'm sure it is, but when you're all said and done, if you have somebody else weld it for you, it's probably gonna be kind of expensive. Here we go. Hi, Zach. If you want light and stiff, go with 1.5L instead of 1.25H. This is Thomas. I think Tom, this is Thomas from Better Mounts. Wait, if you want light and stiff, go with 1. Yeah, I mean, one thing, you know, Thomas and I have talked about the frame parts a lot. He's saying go with I think he means the bigger diameter, 1.5. I think L means the diameter of the tubing. I am very into consistency. And so I don't personally need 1.5, some 1.5, some 1.25. I just want the same all around in terms of diameter. Because parts get confusing and lost and don't match. So I'm always going to go with the same diameters that NRS uses personally. Some people might want to go with different diameters, and Thomas has the parts. And then also, I'm back to 2 functional arms again after another surgery, so I'll get the frames better sorted soon. The intent has always been easy to have ordered frame. Yeah, cool. Yeah, I mean, Thomas had some injuries. So, but for me, like, I know I send a lot of people a bit to Thomas, your website, because you do make cheaper, lighter, better stuff. It's just, if I say go order a frame, it's not like, just 2 clicks and you have a frame. It's like a whole process. So that's all. That's my point. I plan on welding EMT, but I'm curious to see if you have advice. Have you seen things that work or don't work? That's a really, I mean, over 30 years of boating, I've seen a lot of things work and don't work. I couldn't possibly cover them all here. But I've seen EMT work great. I've seen people weld with EMT and it works great. It's just raw. You just make a square, put some more towers on, put a mount for a seat and go. That's all. It's the only advice I can give you without like having to think about my entire boating career and every single thing. I've probably forgotten everything that works and doesn't work. I can't answer the question. I don't have a good answer for you. The cheapest solution and what I did was to find an old used Salmon River style frame that's close enough and find a friend who knows how to weld to make the modification. So yeah, I mean, if you can find a frame that exists, but it's not what you want, and then edit it, change it, that's a solution. But not everybody can just find an old frame to start. I have a handful of old frames from like the 80s in my warehouse just sitting in a stack to maybe do this with someday, but I doubt I ever will because they're heavy. They're starting to rust on the inside. Like they need to go to the dump actually. But if you can find a good one, that'd be great. Okay, so let's see. Let's go back to here. Can you talk about day frames and rough dry cat? Yeah, I would go better mounts and hopefully like just figure it out. I mean, even little things, let me go back to his thing. His seat mount is so amazing because you can pull the seat off. The one problem with NRS frames is you have to put the mount on to bolt it to the bar and then add the seat. And if you want to move it at all, you have to pull the seat off. And the seat, it's really easy to incorrectly thread the bolts, which destroys the seat. I don't know if that makes sense or not. It's a lot to explain. But this mount comes off and on without removing the seat. The seat can stay in the mount. And you can pull it off or you can adjust it. And it's a very big like innovation. You know, those of us that move seats a lot, adjust seats, we know it's a massive pain with NRS stuff. This is a very nice way of doing it. So I really like his seat mounts a lot. Yep. So see, it's attached to the seat, and he can take those little the silver ones can come off and on, just attach to the seat. What happens with seats is, like I said, these black ones here, if you incorrectly thread those, which is very easy to do. I've done it a bunch, and it's a bummer because the seat is destroyed. And these seats are expensive. These seats, I can't remember how much they cost, but they cost more than they should, right? They're like $150 or something, just outrageous. NRS raft seat. Let's see how much they cost. $160 for this padded seat. And I think it's because NRS owns the seat. Like nobody else can make these or own them or whatever. So they have a monopoly on seats. And so they're very expensive seats. I think if you can go without the seat, It'll save you a lot of money. Then going back to the question about DIY, I think if I was doing DIY and trying to save money, I would go with a slant board. Going back here, I would, you know, it's just a piece of wood. Like if you can figure out a mount, a piece of wood, and I, you have to, you know, it's just some little angle iron with some holes. And I, when I do my slant boards, I'm using 2x10s and I have to cut it down. It takes a little while, but I use 2x10s because I know they won't break. If it's like this, this looks like a 1x10 to start. These can break. So if you're doing the Rogue, it's fine. If you're doing something very hard, you want the 2x10. But a lot of people don't like sitting on this because their butt gets tired. So they're like, I need a seat because I need padding. And so if you can handle sitting on this, which I can't, you all can, you just choose not to. This is a pretty affordable way to go. Again, because the seat costs $160. The slant board, I don't know, it costs like $20 in wood and then just some of your time. And I don't drill the holes through mine. I just put a piece of wood in there. I don't think I'd want the holes. And you could have seen people put their Paco pads on top of the slant board for comfort, but I just sit right on it. Okay, so cool. Let's move back to question. I think he hopefully answered that question well. The quick answer is just go to Better Mount, make yourself a frame, and enjoy it. All right, next question. Low flow on the Grand Ronde. Hey, Zach, this year, my third year running the Grand Ronde, mine in Detroit. I'm curious what your thoughts are about flows below 1,000 CFS. Just so you know, I've only run the Grand Ronde once, and it was 50,000 CFS. So I have no firsthand knowledge about low water flows on the Grand Ronde. What I do know is I have a lot of friends who guide trips there in the fall when it's super low, and they say it's fine. That's what I do know. They're all like, they do like fishing trips in September, October. It's very low then. And they're like, yeah, it goes fine. It's great. So I do know it can be done pretty low. I don't think it will get there, but on your info and whitewater guidebook, the recommendation is as low as 500. And when I do a recommendation on whitewater guidebook, that usually comes from me looking at multiple sources and talking to friends with my personal experience, right? So I know 500 is from talking to people. And I wrote this probably 10 years ago, so I don't remember any of this now. The whole point of Whitewater Guidebook is so that I don't have to remember things because I do forget them. You know, and if I have a conversation with some, nice thing about Whitewater Guidebook is if I have a conversation with a friend and like, actually it goes down to 400 and it's really good, I'll change it to 400. Or somebody says, hey, I did 500 and it was terrible, I'll raise it. I change Whitewater Guidebook over time. And it's not a perfect science. Anyway, I've heard the general public doesn't really like below 1,000. I'm not sure what you mean by the general public. Do you mean private boaters, the average private boater? I have no idea what that means, but I know a lot of what I would call the general public, they would be super happy on the Grand Ronde down to 500. Maybe a way to phrase this is your average class 3 boater without much low water experience probably won't enjoy it below 1,000. I would say that. I would say there's a lot of very savvy, experienced boaters that would have a great time, probably at 300 even. The guides at Minim say they'll take their clients at almost any flow. Yeah, exactly. Like, they can't get, I've never heard of the Grand Ronde being too low by guides. Would below 1,000 just be well-balanced rigging, going as light as possible and putting the boat in slither mode, i.e. soft twos in the floor, I'll be in a 16-foot gear rig with no passengers. Yeah, I mean, that's it. Yeah, just don't bring too much stuff. Let air out of the tubes, watch your downstream more. You know, you also have to have some skills, I think. I've never done it that low, so I don't know for sure. But low water boating, you have to have some skills, some athleticism. You'll have to jump out sometimes and like push and pull on your boat. So you have to be physically fit. You have to have good shoes. You know, it's a whole bunch of factors. But, you know, it's nice to have friends. So if you get stuck, they can help you. But I definitely wouldn't do it at a level you're nervous about if you're not a physically fit, agile person with good shoes. You should just assume you're gonna have to jump out sometimes and push and pull. That's what I'd say. Okay, moving on from that one. Sorry, I've only done the Grand Ronde once, super high water, so I'm just doing this I'm sharing information based on my like conversation with a lot of friends. We've run commercial trips there. I just wasn't on them. I've overseen our guides running them. Okay. Just got off a Middle Fork and Main trip from May 29th to June 5th. Awesome. Dude, that sounds great. was running an Air 156R, a great boat, solid boat, and I had quite a bit of gear and a passenger for the middle fork only, and then solo for the main. I noticed quite a few of the other boats on the river were cats. For me, if I have a passenger or two, I will always choose a round boat. Yeah, I mean, cats don't do well with passengers, so that makes sense. But it got me thinking, if I was solo, would I rather be in a 14-foot round boat or a 14-foot cat if gear loads were similar? Not sure if you've ever done a video comparing the pros and cons between the two for a solo multi-day rig. I don't think I've done a video specifically about the pros and the cons between the two for a solo multi-day rig. I probably have done a video comparing cats and rafts, but not specifically what you're saying. And I would say the cat's more forgiving. So, and I'd say the raft for me is more enjoyable. And the raft is nice because it has a floor. And cats have floors too, I guess, so it's fine. But like for me, a raft is just a little more user-friendly. I can, especially with gear, because it spreads the weight out. If you put all the same amount of weight on a cat, it's on two tubes. So those tubes will sit deeper in the water. So the water is deep, doesn't matter. If the water's shallow, you don't want the cat with the same amount of gear as a raft. The raft evens it out. But also I can move around in the boat and get around. I think the main advantage of the cat is it's forgiving. You know, you can plug most holes. You can make massive mistakes. It's a forgiving boat. And I'm sure there might be some other advantage I can't think of right now, but it's mainly forgiving. It's also like, for me, it's annoying to tie it to shore. The rafts, you know, you just like run along the tubes, jump out, grab the rope and tie it to shore. And a cat, there's always this dance when you get the cat to shore. Getting from the cat to the shore always takes a second. And then where do you have a line attached to tie it to shore? That's always a tricky part. So I'm going to say rafts, but you know, if I'm going to go run something for me that's scary, like if it's like South Fork Salmon, the last time I did it, I took a raft, but everybody else had a cat. And right now, if I wanted to like have a leisurely South Fork Salmon, I'd take the cat. If I want to be challenged a little bit, I would take the raft. Or, you know, super high water. If I'm going to do the middle fork at 6 feet, the sailway at high water, something like that, I'd want the cat. Like, I'll take a raft, but the cat is just so forgiving. It just takes all the teeth out of it. You know, like the middle fork is 6 feet to me, 7 feet. In a raft, I can do it, but I'm a little nervous. You know, if I have a cat, it's just playtime. It's just, it's easy. So it's mainly to be more forgiving. Okay. Let's see. Move on. Next question. Main salmon flow. Hey, Zach, I'm on a main salmon permit with a June 30th launch date. I know a month out is a long way to get a sense of how hot it will be and how the snow will respond, but we're sitting on about 20% median snowpack. I'm pretty sure. Well, I mean, it's probably 20% now, but that doesn't mean anything. Like this time of the snowpack, like right, if you look at it right now, that doesn't mean, it's really weird when the snow is melting off, right? Like at the end of the season, at the end of the melt, the numbers get weird, right? And so we didn't have a 20% medium snowpack overall. We were more like 70, 80. It's just right now the math makes it look low because it's the end of it. It could be zero, depending on like the you know, some of the low elevation, it's 0%. That doesn't mean there's no snow. It just means at a certain elevation, it doesn't mean there's no water or no snow in the mountains. It just means that like right now the snow melted at that spot, but there was snow there and the ground is full of water, right? So I think saying we're sitting at 20% median snowpack is a little misleading. It's not that bad. We were in this like 70-ish percent of normal thing this year, which is fine. Like it's a good snowpack. So I wouldn't worry about the snowpack. In your experience, what expectations of water level should we have for the trip and what considerations should we keep in mind to adjust to that? For reference, I'm a kayaker with a mixed group of oar boats. It's fine. It's the main salmon. Doesn't matter. June 30th. Doesn't matter. Like, it's going to be great. I wouldn't even think twice about it. I don't know what the level is going to be. I just know it's going to be fine. It's not going to be high. It might be high. Who knows? Maybe there'll be a flood. Who knows? But it probably won't be high. It's not going to be super low. I'll be running the middle fork August 28th this year. That will be hard. like the main June 30th, it's going to be great. I wouldn't even think about it. I'd stop looking at snowpack. I'd stop looking at everything. Just go and have fun. You're going to have great water. Really, really make me want a cat. I mean, really? Yeah, I mean, yes and no. They're forgiving. They're playful. But they're also like kind of sometimes boring, honestly. Like to me, makes it too easy sometimes. I have nothing for a commercial break today, so we're just keep moving on. Do I have anything? Do I have anything for my commercial break? Nope, nothing exciting. We'll move on. Okay. Topics. Scouting, reading water. Every one of these has started out with, hey, Zach. Wait, hold on. Hey, Zach. Hey, Zach. Hey, Zach. They all, whoa, that's crazy. Hey, Zach, exclamation mark. Hey, Zach, period. Hey, Zach, comma. Hey, Zach, comma. Is it all the same person? Does everybody just say, hey, Zach? Interesting. I really appreciate the knowledge and wisdom you share through your page. Thanks. Nice to hear. I emailed you a few years ago about finding a budget raft. I'm happy to say after 3 years of searching, I found a beautiful 1991 Avon Adventure that's river ready. 3 years of searching. Jeez, that's a lot of searching. A 91 Adventure. So like how old is that now? 26 plus nine. Am I doing the math right? 35 years old. It's so crazy. Those Avons are 35 years old and still running. I mean, it's a classic. The Adventure is a sick design. Those boats were beautifully made. Like, that's awesome. That's good for you. I would worry a little bit, tiny bit, but that's good. I had a question about scouting and running a rapid where there are multiple possible lines. How do you decide which line to take, and what are the main things you look for when making that call? I'm always looking for the safest possible route rafting with young kids, especially on rapids like Whitehorse on the Lower Deschutes and Clarno on the John Day, and I'm hoping to do some Rogan Upper McKenzie in the future. Okay, so, I mean, how do I pick which line to go? I don't know. It's like, there's a lot of times it's just a trade-off. Like, maybe the easiest line has the most dangerous possible outcome, but it's easy, and there's a harder line with less danger. It's your own personal tolerance for risk and your own skills. So if you're asking how I read water, that's very hard to answer in this format. Like we'd have to be on a river looking at things for me to do it. I've done several videos on reading water you can watch, but like reading water is very, very hard to teach. And honestly, the best way to learn to read water is just boat a lot. Otherwise, like I'm looking at lines and I'm like, how difficult is that move? And how dangerous is it? And I make a choice based on those things. I don't like to be in harm's way. So I'll usually avoid danger as much as I can, even if it's a harder move. And I think a lot of people look at rapids and can't assess that. And I have no idea how to teach you how to assess that. I definitely can't teach you how to assess that on an internet show or by email or by any other way. Like, unfortunately, there's no easy way for me to do it. I would say like our online rowing course that we do, we'll go back to this. Will be our commercial break. That's exactly what it'll be. Let me open up our online rowing course real quick and see if I have something. I can't remember. I've done so many videos on that. And let me open that up. And maybe there's a lot of stuff on lines and reading water in there. And we made most of this like 7 or 8 years ago. So I forget what's exactly in there. But in our course, it talks about hazards here. Let's see what we have. I just updated a few of these last week. Reading water, hydraulics. Reading water, recognizing hazards. Reading water, shoot the V and cut the C. These ones are free. So you can just go here. So it says preview. You can go and learn about basic hazards. This is Nick who you can't see this right now. Sorry. Let me open this up. Let me put it in the right window. So this one is the recognizing hazards. And Nick did a lot of this talking about them. I'm pretty sure we have video that goes with like of Nick, but also of hazards. Here's the activity. Shooting the V, cutting the C. This is a big one for reading water. And the class reset, reading water, hydraulics 201. So some of these we just give for free. Some of you have to pay for it. So there's reading water there. And then in class four, there's reading water holes versus port overs. And then there's a whole, is there anything in class five? No. So there's a handful of things on reading water in the rowing school. So that is like the best I can do on the internet without actually standing on a river and being in your boat with you, helping you learn it. But the best way to get better is just, like I said, practice. And back to this. So like question about scattering and rapid with multiple possible lines. I decide my line based on just my experience, knowing what I can and can't do. I can't give you an easy answer for this. I've watched your reading water series multiple times. It's been incredibly helpful. So thank you. Yeah. I mean, the reading water series we've done, I did three of these like a number of years ago. I watched them the other day. They're horrible. I should make a new one for sure because they're just really embarrassing to see how bad they are. And they've gotten a lot of views. Beyond those videos, there's so many different types of features, and it's just every rapid is different and unique, and it's just very hard to compartmentalize it into more rules than I put out in those videos. So yeah, unfortunately I don't have a good answer for you. That's the best I can do. Okay. MFS low water tube pressure to help. Oh, this one didn't start. Hey Zach, that's cool. The first one. To help reduce getting stuck on rocks during low water middle fork salmon, how soft should the tubes be PSI? I don't carry a pressure gauge with me. I never check PSI. I don't no idea in terms of PSI. I just know I can just look at the river level and I know how low it is. I can't give you a sheet. Depends on the level. I mean, it depends on the level. I would say like 1.5 feet. If you step on it, your foot will go down. Your foot will go down a foot. You will like drop inside the tube. The boat will be very slithery. At like 2 feet, you're saying here amount of play when pushing down on tube is such an inch or two. Yeah, like 2 feet, maybe an inch or two. Where I do sometimes too is start a little bit inflated, and if I get stuck, I'll just let some air out. Like I'll get a feel for the river that day, guess a little high. But if I get stuck, I'll go and let some air out. So, but I would say my answer, I've trained a lot of guides on how to run low water middle fork salmon. Let out more air than you think. Like they're always, I'm like, let some air out. And they just go, psst. I'm like, no, no, no. You're going to hold that thing down. Psst. Like it's going to let more air out than you're comfortable with. And, you know, there's not, if you let too much air out, the boat's too slithery and it acts weird in the actual rapids. If you don't let enough air out, you get stuck a lot. And so you have to decide which side you want to err on when you go. But yeah, I mean, it depends. Again, like it depends low water. Low water in the middle fork means different people. To me, low water is like below 1.7 feet. Then it's like, okay, this is low. A lot of people think low water is below 2 feet. Some people say 2.2. Some people say below 3 feet. It depends on your skills, your definition of low water, that kind of thing. Hopefully that helps. I would say the guideline is let out more air than you think. And know that you can let air out as you go. Like if you're getting stuck a lot, take a second, let some air out. Greg Palombo, 5140. Hey, Zach. Hey, Greg Palombo. Okay. Do you make a blower adapter for leafier D7 for a rigid blower, or is it one of the adapters compatible, or is one of the other adapters compatible with the rigid? I don't know. I have to look. Do we make one? What is this? Rigid blower. Let me open up. Let me look at riverhardware.com. It's another chance for a commercial. So blower adapters. We don't have rigid there. Nope. So I don't think we make one for the rigid. And what's the other question? Is it compatible? Is one of the other ones compatible with the rigid? I don't think so. Yeah. And please don't buy them and test them all and then send them back, because we don't really do returns. We're doing the best we can to make these blowers, the ones we have. Like, I offer these blowers as a service to the public, because I know people want them. It's not something I want to spend a lot of my time dealing with returns and things. And at some point, if I have time, we'll try to make one for the rigid. But unfortunately, the earliest that might be is like October. Okay. I have a rigid blower and works on a C7. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. right out of the box. Yeah, like you don't even need, maybe you don't even need an adapter. That's cool. Okay. Topics. Swimming a rapid with someone. What's your advice for swimming a rapid with someone who's too afraid or physically incapable, incompetent to swim it themselves? My advice is don't make them swim the rapid. What's your advice? Why would you? I don't understand. Are you purposefully making? Oh, here's an example. For example, you're standing on a rock with someone in a rapid. The raft is already downstream. Is it safe to lock arms with them as you float down? Okay, so is it safe? I don't know. I don't ever do that. So you're saying you're stuck on a rock with somebody. They're too afraid or physically incapable or incompetent to swim. What do you do? It depends on the situation. If there's no other solution and they have to swim, I'd be like, I don't know, go swimming. Good luck. I mean, anybody can just jump. It depends on the rapid. Anybody can just jump in a rapid and float down to the bottom. Like it doesn't take, usually take a lot of swimming experience. If it's a really dangerous thing below you and they have to make a move, that's a problem. But they literally have to sit there and float. Like any of us can just sit there and float. So you just have to say, hey, jump in. I know you don't want to, but you should jump in and float and then just stay near them. Right. If there's some move they have to make, then you don't want to do that, I guess. I don't think I would lock arms because you might take an elbow to the face or something. But your other options would be to send another boat to the rock to help rescue them, to throw a throw bag to that rock and pull them to shore. You could have a kayak over there and pull them to shore. So if you don't have any of those options, you can't get a boat out there, you can't get a rope out there, they have to swim. So my advice is like, hey, you can stay here all day. You can live for the rest of your life on this rock, or you're going to jump in and float down. And yeah, hopefully that answers your question. I think I understand what you're asking. But if there's no other way to get them off the rock, I guess you could call a helicopter, but I'm guessing they don't want to have a helicopter called so they can just get off a rock. So it just, I guess it depends on a lot of things, as always. How hard is the swim? How good is their life jacket? Like, do they have a beat up old minimal float PFD or something that is like higher float? What other tools are available? All those things. All right, moving on. Okay, I think this is our last question. Yeah, it's the last question. Okay, Tom. Okay, I gotta read this. Hello, Zach. Last week's live show was really good. Again, thank you for saying that because I felt like it was horrible. So I'm glad to hear it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. I have a few things to add about building a 16-foot sotar. I'm going to have Sotar build me a 16-foot, 6-inch sotar with 23-inch tubes. This is the size tube that the 18-foot comes with. So with this in mind, either I can't read or this is just not even a sentence. Maybe I'm just tired. Let me try to read this again. I have a few things to add about building a 16-foot sotar. I'm going to have Sotar build me a 16-foot, 6-inch sotar with 23-inch tubes. This is the size tube that the 18-foot comes with. So with this in mind, if someone has the 23-inch tubes with Sotar 16-foot, you have to make the raft. Okay, this is definitely not a sentence. At this point, I know this is, I mean, it technically is a sentence because it starts with the first word is I and it's capitalized and it ends with a period. But this is just a lot of words. I have to figure out what this is even saying. Okay, so let me think. You're going to get a 16-foot, 6-inch sotar with 23-inch tubes. Cool. Awesome. Smart. Okay, got it. If someone has a 23-inch tube with a sotar 16, you have to make the raft 3 inches wider to fit the cooler. The Canyon 150 is a sweet cooler. We use those in our wing boats for the Illinois and stuff like that. Okay, $300 extra, $300. Okay, cool. Also, I would like to see what think about round or blade. Okay, so let's stick on the raft, first of all. So basically, I think what you're trying to do, and sorry, I'm having a hard time understanding this one, is you want 23-inch tubes, which is awesome. You want a 16-foot, 6-inch sotar, which is cool, like awesome. And you want to fit that Canyon cooler, that 150 quart Canyon cooler. Let me check my email real quick and get a drawing out for you. Okay, so I think I mentioned earlier videos that I'm working with Sotar to design some new boats, and they're gonna look. I don't know which. Give me a second here. Move. How do I do? Stop stream. I'm gonna share this image. Where is it? Window. Okay, so this is up there. This is a wireframe of a boat, of like a series of boats I'm working on, of a 13, a 14 and a half, and a 16. And this one's 156 inches. How many feet is it? 156 divided by 12. This is the 13. So this is a wireframe of the 13. And you know, this is sort of, to me, like the next evolution of like, they're just, this is based off the classic Avon designs, right? This is the model for this is the Avon Adventure, which a lot of us have used for a long time, and the Avon Pro. This is a 13 foot. And this one has 21 inch tubes, is a 13 foot. The 14.6 will have 22 inch tubes, and the 16 will have 23 inch tubes. And the interior width of this boat I'm working with Sotar on will be able to fit that Canyon 150 cooler. I know because I have boats like this that fit it great. So it's going to have this same look, right? But it's not going to be based off of. So, like, I think in the question you're asking, let me get back to the question. You're asking, you're basing this off of like Sotar's boats, and you're basically taking Sotar's design and then tweaking it to what you want. What I'm doing, and this, when I say Sotar's design, they're like classic SL. That's what you're doing. You're basically taking Sotar's designs, which I personally think are not, they're antiquated. I'm just gonna say it, they're a little antiquated. What I'm doing with these designs for Sotar, on Sotar's behalf, because I want these boats, and people keep asking me, you know, what boat should I buy? Where should I get a boat? So I'm trying to get these boats ready. And this is like a preliminary drawing. Let me find where this was. Here we go. Let me edit to. Hold on. There we go. So I'm designing the 16, which is based on this basic geometry. So it's wide enough to handle that Canyon 150 quart, which is a thing you should want because that cooler is awesome. It's bomber and it should fit in a 16 beautifully. So what I'm going to suggest is, instead of just taking Sotar's older designs and adding this, adding that, adding this, just get one of these. Like, if, and I don't have the drawing of the 16 in front of me, but imagine this, the same look with 23 inch tubes and enough interior room for that cooler. Now it's 16 instead of a 16 and a half, which you asked about. I would recommend that you, if you get this boat, don't tell Sotar to make it 6 inches longer. Just go with this boat. This boat is the one I'm designing, is I'm very proud of. It's super solid. So I would say, ask about this boat. Ask them for a drawing of the 16 foot boat I'm working on, and see if that's what you want. See if my email real quick. See if I have the 16 drawing somewhere. I don't. No, I don't. But it's, again, it has the same look and feel. The basic geometry of this 16 will mirror the Avon Pro, which is the workhorse of the industry. It is just like the Avon Pro, to me, was and probably is the best boat ever made. And so this is me taking the Avon Pro and just tweaking it a few places, changing a few things, especially like simple things like the placement of the valves, D-ring placement, and this just making it slightly better based on like things I would want. And so this is what I would go with instead of making a bunch of adjustments to their boats. I get nervous. I think a lot of people are, especially with Sotar, and I heard this a Wing too, actually. Like people, like I've designed some boats for a Wing, and they would take my design and add 3 inches, take my design, add 6 inches. And I think I worry about that with Sotar, because there's do so much custom. You're gonna take a really good boat design and tweak it, and you're gonna get something that I think is imperfect. because you happen to want 16.6 or you happen to want something narrower, longer. I'm a big advocate for like really good boat designs and just stick with the known instead of like too much tweaking. Like I like the Air doesn't do custom. I like the Merivia doesn't do custom. I think those are like actually a positive where a lot of you are like, no, I want 8 colors on my boat and I want to put my own personal touch on the geometry. I think that's a mistake personally, but I'm just sharing that opinion. Okay. I think that was the last question. Let me double check. Wow. We did it. Oh, like this was a hello Zach, not a hey Zach. So that was very, very polite. Thank you for the hell Zach. Oh, here, there's more. That's right. Also, I would like to see what this feels like an AI question. Like AI is asking me, did somebody use AI to ask me a question? Like AI doesn't quite use the English language correctly. Let's read it again. Okay. Also, I would like to see what think about round or blade versus the longer, narrow blades. I think that the shorter round blades do better in low water level with rocks. The round, shorter blades will move more water if it is shallow and just fine for deep water rapids rowing. Also, what do you think? Oh, man. I'm sorry. I can't think that hard. I think what you're asking is, do I like weird blades? And my answer is going to be always the same. Just get normal blades. Just get Dynalite blades. I know some of you want to get the like shallow water shoal cuts and the this and the that and this. Fine. I don't really care. Do it if you think it's important. Just get Dynalite blades or whatever like normal blades there are and figure it out. Because you're going to, unless you can afford to have your low water blades, your high water blades, your like overnight blades, your single day blades, and you want to be switching them out, I don't know, do that. But I would say just get one set of blades and go row everything with it. Like back in the day, we had wood oars. It was just a piece of wood and it was an oar. We used it on everything. It turns out you can run all these rivers with just a basic blade. So I would get just a classic blade and move on. That's my answer. There's like round, shorter blades and all these things. And people are all getting their shoal cut blades to get ready for low water middle fork. We're running 18-foot boats with the same blades we run on the middle fork at 1.5 feet or 6.5 feet, and it's fine. So I would do that. Okay, another sentence. I have a 13-foot Sotar paddle rack with drop stitch floor. It's amazing boat. Okay. Sotar's amazing. Thanks, Heinz. Oh, you're not AI. You're Heinz. Okay, cool. Portland, Oregon. Thanks for all you do with the rafting industry. Okay, I think, Heinz, I think I understood your questions. I'm gonna summarize my answers. Sorry, this is sort of a lot of verbal diarrhea as I tried to work through this. Heinz, I would say what you're doing sounds awesome. I'm also in parallel doing the same thing. Maybe ask Sotar about that 16 I'm designing right now, because that might be your answer. And I think the answer to your oar thing is just go with normal oars. Don't overthink it. I think it'd be great. That's my quick answer. I would say too, thank you for saying last week's live show was good. And thank you for saying thanks at the end. That makes me feel better. Because again, sometimes I feel like I'm saying stupid, dumb things. And so it makes me more confident. All right. Well, everybody, I think we pulled it out to a show. There's no comments. So we're going to shut this one down. Thanks for watching. I should be here next Tuesday to do this again. And hopefully I get more fun questions. Thank you all for submitting. If you submit them, Whitewater guidebook page, I'll open that up really quick because it's helpful. Get rid of this. And now that I have time, if you go to Whitewater guidebook, and for those of you that don't know, oh man, this is going to take some time. Hold on. For those of you that don't know, I have a website called Whitewater Guidebook. It came up earlier in the show, and it hold on 1 second. Stop screen. I'm going to add. It's where I've written a lot of river descriptions in the past where I keep my notes. And so I basically put my river notes online for other people to use. It's not perfect. It's just my notes, and I keep track of things. I share photos of trips I was on to help other people figure things out. And I have pages like this one. This is my Middle Fork Flow page where I've just taken different graphs and put them in one place. Some of these graphs are, the links are dead because the government took them away, but it's where I go to look at graphs and I keep track of links that I'm going to check before a trip to check things out. but also up here in the Gear Garage, if you hit ask a question, this is the best way to ask a question because we see it and then we catalog it and it gets to me. And so use this, but also if you're looking for a guide to a certain river, I have a bunch of descriptions, especially in Oregon, because I live there. If there's a river you've thought about, you could click on it and more. Like the Rogue is here, and done the best I can to, you know, add some information and photos and videos. I just did the Rogue last week, so I'll probably add some new videos from the Rogue here. But it's a guidebook, which you can find tons of Rogue guidebooks, but you probably can't find a whole lot of guidebooks to the Kalawash River, for example. So if you ever thought about doing the Kalawash, you know, I've shared some information and photos from the Kalawash, if it's something you thought about doing. And so, yep. And then it's also a blog post, a blog. So, you know, like I wrote a blog on choosing a throw bag last week and some thoughts. And so it's a place you can read blog posts, but we also post the live show here as well. For those of you that want to watch it later, it's also a podcast. Oh, the podcast isn't showing up. That's interesting. But there's usually an AI summary for each one too. That's weird that there's not, that the podcast isn't showing up. Usually there's a player at the top like this that plays it, is in addition to video. It's weird that's not showing up on that one. Anyway, I don't know. I don't know why. But thanks for watching, and I'm going to shut this one down. We'll see y'all next Tuesday.